Very nice to be here on this Sunday morning. I like coming up on Sunday mornings. There's not much traffic. I have to come down from around Spirit Rock, where Woodacre and Fairfax area, so it's really a nice drive. And it's lovely to see so many people here on Sunday morning coming to meditate and hear the Dharma. It's a beautiful opportunity for us to hear the Dharma. So my intention is not to talk for the whole 45 minutes, because I always wish I had more time with you and there was time to actually get into some discussion about the topic. So, and yet on the other hand, I want to set up the topic so that you have some understanding. I think we're getting a little high-pitched there, yeah. I want you to have some understanding of the topic, and what I'd like to talk about today is, is one of the more, the most essential teaching of the Buddha, which is about desire and the transformation of desire. And one reason I want to talk about this, there's a couple reasons. One is that I've been reflecting on it all month because it's a topic we've been looking at in our dedicated practitioners program that we have at Spirit Rock. But also because I realize that it's such an area of confusion for people in the Buddhist tradition, what is meant by the word desire. Probably on every retreat that I've taught, and I can almost say almost every retreat over several years of teaching now, somebody asks the question when we present the Four Noble Truths, and that the cause of suffering is desire. Probably every retreat somebody says, well, what about the desire for freedom? Or the desire to want to meditate, or the desire to want to have your children be well and happy, or for there to be peace and harmony in the world. Isn't that desire? And this is such an essential aspect to understand in the Buddhist teachings. Otherwise, we can kind of veer off in a confused way, because it is true that those wholesome desires, are those what we might call the good desires, are still desire. And in fact, it's the desire that we actually want to transform the negative desire or the unwholesome desire into. So we actually want to take those desires that arise from the more negative, difficult aspect of our being into a way that is going to be of goodness, of wholesomeness. So I want to talk about that just a little bit, because there are two words from the Pali. The Pali is the language that the Buddha's discourses came to us in. And so we can always go back to the Pali words and to look and say, well, what did the Buddha say, or what was the Buddha pointing to? Because one of the difficulties that we have is that we take these the Pali language, the translations of the Buddha's teachings, and we translate that into English. And English is such a limited language, really. We can't always find good translations for the words that the Buddha was using. So if we actually go back to the Pali, there are two words that really help to unravel this misunderstanding. And those words are tanha and chanda. And these are the words that I'd like us to reflect on today, because if we have a sense, if we can get a sense of what these words mean and how they're relevant for us in our life, then there's the possibility each day, each hour, each moment to reflect on a way to transform that energy, the energy of tanha, which is the cause of suffering. So tanha is the Pali word, which translates as that word that we use in the second noble truth when we talk about the cause of suffering is desire, or tanha. The cause of suffering is attachment, or the cause of suffering is craving. And because I'm aware that there's often people who come to these meetings who don't have so much background in the Buddhist teachings, just to review very briefly what the Four Noble Truths are, because that's the essential, it's like the nut of the Buddhist teachings. We might say that all of the Buddhist teachings arise out of the Four Noble Truths. And so to understand the teachings of the Buddha is to understand the teachings of the Four Noble Truths. So the Four Truths, the first one, there is suffering, and this needs to be understood. The second, there is a cause of suffering, and this needs to be let go of or relinquished. There is an end to this suffering, and this needs to be realized. This is the realization, the end of this suffering. And the fourth, there is a path to the end of suffering, and this needs to be followed. And so when one enters into the Buddhist teachings, they enter into a path. We enter into a path which we follow. And all the teachings unfold on that path. So the cause of this suffering, the cause of this dissatisfaction, this dis-ease that we feel in our lives, this is the tanha. That's the word that's translated from the Pali. And this word is translated as craving or ambition, a restlessness or a dis-ease. The most literal translation is a thirst, when we're thirsty for something. The Buddha said that craving is the chief root of suffering. It is craving which gives rise to ever fresh rebirth, and bound up with pleasure, now here, now there, finds ever fresh delight. So it is, tanha is conditioned by the feeling of unpleasantness. When we feel the unpleasantness, it conditions the seeking, that wanting of the pleasure, because we don't want to be in a experience of discomfort or unpleasantness. So it's conditioned, the tanha is conditioned by this feeling, and it leads to the seeking which panders to self-interest. It's about what's in it for me. What's going to happen for me? How am I going to feel? What am I going to get from this? So this tanha is very much bound up in the self-interest, which then, of course, narrows our view, limits our intentions and our energies for ourself, for our own personal gain. What's in it for me? And this movement of mind is supported by and nourished by ignorance, by an unclear seeing of the truth of things. Because when we think about ourselves as separate, isolated beings, separated and cut off from all the rest of humanity and nature, then of course we're going to be very self-interested, because we think we have to look out for number one. We have to look out for me. So it arises out of that view of blindness, or we might say when the veil is over our eyes. And this is the motivator for our choices and our actions when we are involved in tanha, when we are caught in a self-view, and we are caught in the view that there is only me and I need to look out for me. Ajahn Chah, who is, as many of you know, was one of the great meditation teachers from the Thai forest tradition, Jack Kornfield's teacher. And he likens the tanha to a waging war with life. You know, waging war with life. And this is from Ajahn Chah. He says, "We human beings are constantly in combat, at war to escape the fact of being so limited by so many circumstances we cannot control. But instead of escaping, we continue to create suffering, waging war with evil." And of course, he said this before the Bush administration. "Waging war with evil, waging war with good, waging war with what is too small, waging war with what is too big, waging war with what is too short and too long, or right and wrong, courageously carrying out the battle. This is that feeling of tanha. You know, it's an energetic sense within ourselves that actually pulls us into something out of some kind of view or some kind of sense of what is right and what is wrong and what needs to be, and making demands on life and having expectations. And it's quite a kind of, as I talk about it, perhaps you get a sense of that energetic quality to it, which may not necessarily be so helpful, may not necessarily be so useful in the end of things. But there's another motivator for our actions. And this is the interesting piece. And this is called chanda. It's an aspect of chanda. Or when we talk about this desire in a wholesome way, it's called dharma chandra. Dharma chanda. And that means desire for dharma, or desire to be aligned with the laws of nature, the desire for that which is good or right or true, but not necessarily from an idea of what's going to be right or good for me, but from an idea of what's going to be right and good for all beings, which, of course, I am included in that. But what is going to be good for society, for humanity, for nature, is it's a much bigger view and a much a wider view of that energy that can be extended outward in a way that is much more positive. Another word for the Dhamma Chanda is Kusala Dharma. Kusala Dharma. And Kusala in the Pali means karmically wholesome. When we talk about the movement or the aspect of these teachings into a positive way, we're talking about the Kusala Dharma. It means profitable or morally good or skillful, which is usually associated with the lack of greediness, or the lack of the aversive or hateful quality that arises within us. It's when the energy or that force of greed and hate is dissipated within our being, then the desire, the energy that moves within us, has a chance to be propelled in ways that are wholesome and beneficial for all. It's like we are energy. You know, our being is energy. We have a lot of energy. And the energy which arises in intentionality, how we propel our intentions, how we direct our intentions, can be colored either by the ignorance, which will keep us caught in the self-interest, what's in it for me, or that energy can be colored by the chanda, by the energy of, well, what can benefit all beings? What can benefit in a greater way than just for myself? Chanda is directed towards benefit. It's directed towards benefit. Benefit for society and for nature. And it leads to effort and action. Because if we want these good situations and these good experiences to happen in ourselves and in our life, then that does take some effort. It doesn't just happen by itself. There's an effort that's needed both through our own inner transformation, but there's also an effort that's needed to apply ourselves and push through the obstacles that are obvious and apparent all the time. And it propels us into action. So effort and action, because we want that. As we contact the chanda, the energy of chanda, the dhamma chanda within ourselves, we are propelled into action because we want that benefit for society, for humanity, for nature. And this energy, this chanda, is nourished by wisdom. As tanha is nourished and supported by ignorance, the chanda is nourished and supported by wisdom. So when we are connected to a deeper wisdom within our being, within our heart, within our mind, then there's the possibility to transform the tanha, the self preoccupied, the self-obsessed energy into the chanda, into that which is benefit. And this can happen in any moment. That's the power of these teachings, that as I bring wisdom to my experience, to the situation, to the relationship, to the communication, to my work, to any action that I'm involved in, there's the possibility for that transformation of energy, the transformation of that desire. So the interesting thing is that it's not the desire that has to go away. And I think this is the place that I was often confused about as well in this Buddha, in the Buddhist teachings, because desire was always the bad thing, you know, get rid of all desire. And then when I went about 10 years or more ago, I was in India, and I met my, who I consider my guru. I have the good fortune of having met a guru, Punjaji, in Lucknow, India. And he would talk about this desire for freedom, and the desire for wakefulness, the desire for liberation. And because I was such a good Buddhist back in those days, I always said, no, you know, all desire has to go. You can't even have desire for freedom. You know, you have to come into this place in yourself where you're completely equanimous and silent and still, and that's the place, you know, that's being pointed to. But Punjaji would talk about this, the waking of this passionate energy for liberation, for freedom. And as he talked about that, then I felt it. I could feel into it. I could touch into it in my own being. And it was like igniting a fire that had been cooled. And there were only just a few embers there that I was trying to put out, you know, trying to put out those embers, because I thought that was the path. You know, you can't have any heat, any fire there, because, you know, that could wake up and then you could get angry and, you know, deluded and, you know, do all this kind of negative kind of action. And so he said, no, ignite that fire. Put fuel on that fire. You know? And I remember it feeling a little bit almost risky to do that, because I didn't know what would happen as I ignited that fire. And yet as I allowed that to happen, I could see that that was the truth. That was the truth, because it allowed this energy of my being to come alive. Whereas sometimes the Buddhist teachings, if we're not understanding so well what's being pointed to, we can almost feel like there's a wet blanket, you know, being put on our energy, on our personality, on our character. And we have to kind of constrict ourselves into this sort of very morally good person, you know. But I think that there's a possibility, as we reflect more deeply on this energy, the energy of what we are, that we can see how this energy takes on a kind of a coloring, depending on the condition of the mind, the condition of the heart. And that coloring, if that coloring is conditioned by wisdom, if it's conditioned by a deeper understanding of who I am and what's true about this, the nature in which I live in, then there's the possibility for the transformation of that energy. And it's not even like I really then have to do very much about that. The energy itself starts to take shape and starts to move me into action, which is going to be of benefit. Now, this chanda is this desire for true well-being, and perhaps you're already putting together that this means that is the movement of metta, the movement of loving kindness, the movement of compassion, so that when my heart is open in that way, when my heart is in a place of connection, then the loving kindness and the compassion is an expression of that chanda. I am deeply wishing for the wellness of all beings in which I am one. For most of us, we are motivated by both tanha and chanda, right? If we're really honest with ourselves. You know, there is the tanha there. You know, there is the wanting for ourselves and getting caught up in our narrow view of what's good for me, what's right for me. And sometimes that is, we see very clearly how that is narrowing and limited and how we feel closed off. But when we're honest, we also can imagine times that we are quite open and connected in, that the chanda is really flowing for us. Sometimes the sense of ourself or that self-interest is not so strong. The sense of self isn't so strong. The boundaries of how we know ourselves to be, how we feel ourselves to be, it's just not so solid. And so there is much more sense of that connection and the sense of the non-separateness of our being as we move. And so in that, then there is a natural expression of the loving kindness and the metta. But yet, one possible area of confusion around chanda could be that any time, I could be thinking that any time I'm thinking about myself and what I need and what's good for me, then is tanha. And it's not. An example of this is over this last month when I've been talking a bit about this and sharing this this reflection, there were two different nurses that I spoke to at different times, different situations, and they both had the same question or comment. And they said that in my work, it's very very difficult, it's very overwhelming, very challenging, and I often feel like I'm burnt out. And sometimes I just wish that I didn't have to work so hard. And I really need to pull back and do less, and I need more time for myself. And I just see now that that's just tanha. You know, it's just, I'm just thinking about myself. And when I think about that, I just feel so guilty, and this is so selfish, and I just know that I need to just keep being there for others. And I'm hearing in the room a couple of responses to this, like, of course, as you hear that, I mean, it seems pretty obvious that of course that's not tanha. You know, and I needed to remind each one of these women, they were both women, that this is chanda. This is a movement of loving kindness to yourself. This is compassion to yourself. Because if you don't pull back, if you don't look after yourself and nourish yourself, then of course you're not going to be any good to anybody. You know, you're not going to be able to continue to be of benefit for all beings. You're not going to be able to take care of other people. You're going to fall apart, basically. And it's one of these women certainly seemed like she was on the verge of that. But it was so, there was so much guilt because there was a confusion in that view, because this was selfish. I'm just thinking about myself. So somehow, sometimes the chanda can take the form of thinking about me. Thinking about me so that I can be of benefit. if I take care of myself, if I look after myself, if I do the things I know that I need to do, then I really can be there in a way that's going to be helpful. I will feel stronger. I will feel more whole, more connected to myself, which will then allow a greater connection. So it's a little bit of a gray area, isn't it? Because it's hard to know. It's hard to know, well, is this a movement that is more selfish or is it not? And this is the place where we do need to take some time and reflect. We do need to take some time and question our deeper motivation and what is giving rise to the motivation for my action, for my communication, for the wanting of something that is arising at the moment. What is that? You know, again and again, bringing some mindful reflection to those motivations. And I think this is so necessary because you can see how this is what is affecting our world right now. It touches right there that the causes and conditions that are propelling our world to move one way or another. And the more that people come into consciousness about what is motivating choices and actions, then there may be more possibility for some shift of consciousness in this world. So what I'd like to ask you to do before I open it up for some conversation is to just take a moment. We'll take a test to a little bit of personal reflection. And I'd like you to reflect on, just for a couple of moments, how does tanha play out in your life right now? Tanha, that which leads me to consider only myself. That ambition that is somewhat narrow and limiting. Just see what wants to arise as you ask yourself that question. How does tanha play out in my life? And then to turn it, how does chanda play out in my life? That intention, that energy, that will that is directed outward towards other beings rather than just myself, where I care and wish for the well-being and the happiness of others. Okay, so I'm hoping you're getting a sense maybe what the different qualities are between the tanha and the chanda, the Dhamma chanda. And to close, just I want to remind you of an ancient wisdom from the Bhagavad Gita, the old ancient text, which even the Buddhist teachings arose from, where it said, "The secret of human freedom is to act well." without attachment to our results. And you see, that is the nut of the Buddhist teachings as well. The secret to human freedom is to act well. So we have a little time for some comments or questions and any reflections that may be arising for you while you're hearing this talk this morning. I hope people don't feel too guilty. Yes, please. That's a wonderful reflection. So the reflection is around getting more involved in social action and noticing how sometimes it's just there's just pure rage that's there that could or maybe sometimes does want to motivate the actions, and noticing that doesn't feel very good. But then when there's the movement of caring for the community, you care for the community, it just feels so different. And that feeling itself is a way of signaling to you what to listen to, sounds like. And that rage, which is a wonderful insight, that sometimes just means I'm too tired, I need some rest, I'm not responding to this very well. Not a good time to send emails. I think we're all learning that in this technological society. We're learning about email etiquette. And so just starting to feel more energetically what feels good and what doesn't feel good. And that itself, you know, even though it may sound simplistic at one level, is a wonderful thing to listen to in ourselves. What feels good and what doesn't feel good? Because when we are settled in our wisdom and our heart, it feels good, doesn't it? Yeah, and it doesn't matter then what we're doing. You know, we could be involved in conflict and something very difficult, but there's a whole different energetic sense in ourselves. Yeah, thank you. Yes.
Just recently, I really lost my cool. Very, very angry. Turned down for a long time. And it felt very cool. But it's not something that never happened with this person. This is something that, in my family, is very difficult. One of the difficult people that I have to deal with. Mm-hmm.
So the question there was probably not everybody heard. She's talking about how she lost her cool in a relationship and hadn't done that for a long time, maybe ever, and is coming to some realization that perhaps she may need to accept the fact that this is very difficult and may need to let the relationship go. And is that tanha or chanda? and it's difficult to know. And yet you use the word, maybe I need to accept this. What does that sound like? What does that, the acceptance, sound like? A family member.
But yet, I can't change that person. And I have to only be responsible for myself. And that, that acceptance, I realize that, we're both the same in the sense that I really have to be responsible for myself. And maybe it's never going to happen that there'll be a place of mutual.
Mutual acceptance. So there's the recognition that you may need to accept the relationship as it is. You cannot change this person, but you can take responsibility for yourself. And in that, it sounds like some letting go is already happening. As you come into the place of wisdom and understanding that you can't change this person, you will never be able to change this person. I mean, even that is already a whole leap of understanding, a whole leap of recognition. If you allow that to settle in, that you can only take care of yourself, that is the wisdom. That is the wisdom, and from that place, the rest takes care of itself in some ways. That is the letting go. You may not have to let go of the relationship. That may sound a little bit too final at this point. But it sounds like there's letting go already happening, the letting go that needs to happen. And that is the letting go that you can change this person or this person will ever change. I mean, that's the hardest thing for us to get, isn't it? We so much want to change the people we're close to because the love is so strong. There's so much love there. So I think that the first step is the wisdom that's arising that you're speaking of accepting the situation, accepting yourself, taking care of yourself, and that is certainly of benefit. That is certainly the chanda. Chanda is whatever benefits the greater good of the situation. So it's already here. It's already happening, and it's difficult, and it's very difficult, particularly with those that we're close to, those that we love, and the ones that we love usually are the most difficult, because you know that the love and the hate. I mean, if you've reflected on this, that the circle, the when the love gets very, 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 very intense and circles around, it can get really close to hate because then we're not getting what we want from that person. You know, it can really trigger that. So it's really sometimes an intensification of that love and that attachment to that love. Thank you. We have time for one more. Just yes, in the back there.
If I understood you correctly, you're saying the source of suffering, of craving, of thirst, is ignorance, a constricted sense of me. What is the source then of chanda?
So the tanha is that. Is the ignorance of a constricted sense of me. So that's what you're right. So that, repeating back that. So that is the tanha. So what is the chanda? So in a simple way, the chanda is a letting go of that constriction. It really is, and you can feel it energetically. It's like if you imagine yourself really bound up and constricted and tight and sort of the extreme of that tanha, you know. And sometimes when I can remember times being very caught up in the greed, and I just felt, when I reflect back on it, I can almost feel like I'm in a trance. I'm like, I've lost myself. I'm so constricted, and if I want something so bad, and I'm not getting it. So the chanda arises when that starts to dissolve, when that constriction starts to relax. So any time we find ourselves starting to relax, that means the heart is also relaxing, the tightness around our heart, the shield around our heart, the constriction of how we know ourselves to be. When it starts to relax, the heart opens and allows for the wisdom, allows for the connection. So that's why in all the spiritual traditions, our practice is relaxing, to relax. Relax the mind, relax the body, relax the heart. And we have practices, the metta, the compassion, the letting go, the renunciation, all the practices which help relax that grasping, the tanha. So I practice, I can see my practice has evolved over the years as one that as I go through the day, mostly what I'm doing is paying attention to the ways that my body constricts and the way that I loosen. So that whenever I notice, whatever I'm doing, whatever it is, a phone call, a meeting, being in my home, washing the dishes, just starting to pay attention to the tension and then help myself relax. Help myself relax. Through the breathing, through the shaking, or through the loosening, through the, just the all day long, just all day, just as much as possible, just rolling those shoulders and let the head roll. And, you know, that is such a good practice for us. So that tension, the stress, the constriction, the ideas, you know, because it's through the idea of who I am and who I should be and how things should happen and what I want to have happen. It's through the mind door that constriction starts to happen. So we let go of the thoughts, we let go of the tightness, the constriction, and the heart starts to open. The heart opening is an immediate result of that. Yes?
So when you say, what is this I?
That the I is the I that's still there. And it's through the investigation. Chanda is also supported by intelligent reflection and investigation. So it's through that investigation that we can come to the end of the self-identity. We can come to the end of the desire. So we might even say that chanda is the desire that takes us to the end of desire. Takes us to the end of the self-view. So it's still path.
So when you understand the I, the so-called good desire also dissolves?
That also dissolves. Mm-hmm. Then what's left is an expression of realization. An expression of truth, an expression of pure beingness, an expression of pure consciousness, which knows no boundaries, no separation, which is the pure expression of wisdom. Yes, thank you. Time. Thank you. 1 minute of sharing the merit for our meeting this morning. May the merit of our goodness, of our practice, and the efforts of our meeting this morning be not only for ourselves, but go out to all beings everywhere, like ripples on a pond, so that all beings may be free of suffering and live in a world filled with peace and harmony. May all beings be free. Thank you.